Cultural Fugazi, an optimistic take on the culture of the end times. I am Justice, and that's Chris.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about Creed 2 and Creed 3. So, heads up, Creed 3 just came out. We just got done seeing it on March 4th on a Saturday. We went to a nice early showtime. So, if you don't want spoilers for Creed 3, go watch Creed 3 and then come back and listen to this episode, because we're going to be talking very explicitly in detail about Creed 3, the movie.
There are going to be some spoilers.
Not some, the whole thing.
Yeah. Here there be all the spoilers.
Yes. So, heads up. So, all right. So, today, we're probably going to, we're going to talk about both movies, but we really were trying to come up with what the heck these movies are saying, and it was easier to target Creed 3 than it was Creed 2. So, Chris, do you want to hit us with our thesis for today?
Absolutely. So, as a culture, we're currently wrestling with how to handle history, and Creed 3 is interested in dealing with the past and history in a way that acknowledges its impact, but seeks to move forward and embrace the present.
And we targeted Creed 3 with that because...
So definitely seems like Creed 2 is dealing a lot more with the idea of history and not necessarily engaging as much with, you know, you don't even necessarily see as much of the impact of, you know, at the very end, you kind of get some gesturing towards, look, there's a little bit of resolution maybe, but it really does do more to point at history and less to actually engage with history of those characters and of where they come from. Creed 3, however... Oh, we're going to get into how that is very interested in interrogating, hey, where do these people come from, and what does that mean for them now, and what does that mean for them moving forward?
What do we say? We say everything is good for something, right? Or at least everything is good. All things being good. Let's talk about Creed 2 and act like... give it the benefit of the doubt that Creed 2 had something to say about dealing with your past. Man, I don't know. Like, Creed 2's idea of what the past is, mm-hmm. is Soviet era, USSR, Russia. We start in the Ukraine with our excommunicated Ivan Drago.
He's let the motherland down.
Yep, he's let the motherland down. So they sent him to the Ukraine, which... I don't think that's how that works anymore. I don't know.
No. Yeah, that seems... Watching that now did hit a little bit different than watching it in 2018 did. Although, probably shouldn't have been quite as much of a surprise. But
yeah,
here we are.
Here we are. So, Drago and his big beefy boy man son. Also, Drago, I forget what his actual first name is. Decide that they want to fight.
So that's Victor.
Is it Victor?
Yeah, I believe
so. I was going to try to. I should have thought of the most Russian-ass Russian name.
Yes.
That's not Ivan.
Right.
And it's Victor. Of course it is.
Yeah.
And they want to fight Creed. That's kind of where the movie, like, that's where the movie is, right? So, hey, right. They want to fight Creed. What does that mean? Is the history and relationship with Rocky, Apollo, and Ivan Drago interesting material to pull from is kind of one of the first things I want to get into, right? So I did not watch that movie to lead into Creed 2 at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't specifically go back to it. There is something in its absurdity of that Rocky film. You know, if he dies, he dies, right? Like, mm-hmm. break him. You know, there are specific things of the absurdity of that movie that carry over into some of the tone. There's implied baggage when you bring other Rocky movies into a Creed movie, and this movie does not grapple with that baggage very well.
Well, it's very much dealing with history as nostalgia versus dealing with history as an actual, like, thing to be reckoned with, which... with the Rocky franchise is not difficult to do. I mean, as you have, you know, pointed to, there's a lot of Rocky. There were a ton of movies. There's a lot of stuff that you can point back to. And particularly now, as you have 80s nostalgia, like, really, just permeating the air, it's very easy to have a movie that goes, ah, yes, remember the 80s? Do you remember this Russian character from the 80s? Do you remember our American hero from the 80s? What if his young protege was also dealing with the... You know, it sort of does lean very heavily on that feeling of history as nostalgia versus actually looking through the lens of, well, what do these things mean? What did they mean then? And what do they actually mean now? And you don't get the movie really tackling that much.
Knowing where we are at now with U.S. and Russian relations, if you made that movie today versus 2018, right, it's a entirely different film.
But even in 2018...
It should have been a different
yes.
film.
Yes! A lot of the themes that we're dealing with now are just an extension of stuff that was very much at the forefront in 2018. And sure, it takes a while to write a script. And, you know, obviously, you know, that all couldn't have been as easily. It's 2018. Like, come on.
Yeah. The Russians have been the bad guys for a long time. We now live in a world where that is very real, right? They're not just cartoon bad guys. You know, there is active military conflict happening this very moment on the other side of planet Earth with one of our allies and Russia, right? Very real, a very real state of affairs. 2018 was a very real state of affairs. When was the annexation of Crimea?
I believe that was that 20? I think that was 2018.
Yeah. So like yeah. very real,
yeah.
real tensions with that specific relationship. And at least the Rocky movie that did this dealt and grappled with those specific tensions, right? Hey, it's a big deal that this American fighter, Apollo Creed, the guy who wears the American USA shorts, is fighting and willing to die, you know, tells Rocky to not throw in the towel because he loves America so much that he wants to fight for all of America, right? Like, there's at least tension there. We have to deal with the ramifications of the current state at the time of U.S. and Russian relations.
Well, and even the original movie was doing more interesting social commentary. You have a black man, Apollo Creed. I don't know how many folks are around in the 80s, but race relations were not great then either. There were some issues. Reagan, not historically known for being super cool with black people.
You know, when you put it like that, yeah, there's... It is a complicated thing to tackle, right? And to do that in an 80s action movie, let's call the Rocky movies action movies, they are.
Mm-hmm.
To do that in an 80s action movie, you get cartoon villains, you get big, beefy men smacking each other with boxing gloves. Like, it's cool. And it's a very cool thing. Like, they build a very cool movie out of those ideas. I have a hard time applying the idea of anything really being cool to Creed 2, right? Like, there's a couple things where they try to build up some differences between where the Dragos are training, which is in the Ukraine, and where Adonis is training for his fight, which is in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And they kind of show like the differences between, hey, this is a very sterile environment.
Yeah, you get a color palette that is blues and grays for Drago's training. You get a color palette that is browns and warm tones for Creed's training. Very cold temperature weather-wise versus in the desert. So yeah, trying to paint like stark differences using the environment and using the visual storytelling and color to think, hey, totally different.
Yeah. But it's Vegas, right? Like so they do this fight twice in Creed 2. The first time Adonis fights Drago, Adonis loses. And then the second time he fights, because Rocky's not in his corner, right?
Right. Well, and he gets obliterated.
I right. Mean, like, yeah, he kidneys. Gets absolutely destroyed. Yeah, kidneys ruptured, the whole thing. And then it turns out all he needed was Rocky Balboa in his corner. And then he can win the fight, and he wins the fight the second time through. But again, the first time he trains with the guy who ran the gym that he used to try to get to, whose name is... What
Duke.
Is it? Duke, that's right, because he's in Creed 3 everywhere.
Yeah, little Duke.
And there was a thing that I did write down when that training stuff was happening, because Creed moves out of Philly. He moves back to LA to be closer to his ma. He buys a much nicer place. Apparently, there are no nice places in Philly. None. Right? Like, they're like, hey, we have to move to LA to have more space. It's like, nah, they have space in Philly.
They do.
The decisions are very, we have to get from point A to point B.
They're not driven by the characters and their motivations. They're driven by the plot. It's what does the plot need to move forward? And I think that's, you know, the heart and soul. We talked a bit about this before watching Creed 3. The heart and soul of the first Creed movie was the relationships between those characters. That was the engine that drove all of the action forward. The reason that people got in the ring had to do with the relationships with the people around them and with, you know, people that weren't there anymore. Adonis's dad. So that was the engine. In Creed 2, it is the fight. You got to do this first fight, then you got to do the second fight. And none of that has to do with Adonis, really. It all has to do with, well, but we have to have the Drago fight. We have to have the spectacle of these two people being in the ring together. And so it loses that anchor to the actual people that we cared about. And you don't have that as your motivator, and you don't have that pulling you. You just have, look how big this fight is. Look at this. Oh, man.
That's a pretty good Sylvester Stallone.
Thank you.
That was pretty good. Where I came away from Creed 2 with was we spent a lot of time dealing with Rocky's relationship with the Drago fight, and it did not feel very organic when we spent time with Adonis's relationship with the Drago fight, right? It was very paint by numbers of the, you know, Rocky was literally the guy in Apollo Creed's corner who listened to Apollo to not throw in the towel.
Mm-hmm.
And that is part of the reason Apollo Creed is dead. Not the only reason.
Right.
You know, but that's part of the guilt that Rocky has to deal with. Adonis then spends, I guess I'm mad at you now. We're going to cry for a minute. And now I hate you. Because maybe something about this fight I'm dealing with from a trauma perspective. And I will say, we talked about this more with Creed 1. That was a movie where some actual bad things happened to people, right?
Yes.
Hey, Rocky got, you know, Rocky was diagnosed with cancer. He had to deal with his cancer treatment, had to deal with the fact that he doesn't talk to his son.
Yes.
And Adonis is the only one there. They do their found family, right? Mm-hmm. That they really build out. And they create that. And then apparently in Creed 2, all we had to do is be like, oh, right, we have unchecked baggage that we have not dealt with. And that's enough to break that family apart and scatter them all to the wind.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's very frustrating to have watched that. And it did, again, it felt like that was done in service of the plot and not so much as like all that growth that we do in that first movie just undercut it completely because we need Rocky not to be in his corner for that first fight. And then make the resolution quick and easy because we need Rocky back in his corner. And I think even when you talk about the historical, like, Rocky and Drago aspect of that, we don't get a ton of actual dealing with, like, Rocky. You get a little bit of Rocky being like, I feel a little bit bad that, like, I let your dad die. But even that, you don't get a ton of digging into that history. It's just sort of, like, again, gestured at. Like, this is something that bothers Rocky a lot, and so clearly this fight means a lot to him. But the movie doesn't dig into that much. It's just used as set dressing. And so, again, past as, you know, nostalgia, past as something that is gestured to, not as something that is actually reckoned with or like seen through or used to help like figure these characters out and flesh out their motivations and figure out where they're going or even where they have been.
Creed 2 has a lot of sins. I'll call them sins.
Yes.
One of the really egregious ones is that lack of growth, or how we erase all of the growth between that family. I would say at a meta level outside of the movie, between Creed 2 and Creed 3 and Sylvester Stallone's relationship with that movie franchise, I could see how Creed 2 is where you can kind of see some of the wheels falling off a mm-hmm. little bit on who is the main character of this movie, right? And that, you know, what made Creed 1 so compelling was that Adonis Creed has something to say, and he needs Rocky to help him accomplish it. And Creed 2 is Adonis, I guess, kind of has something that he has to deal with. And I guess, kind of, again, we need Rocky to help him deal with it. Where also, we've done this exact same thing before, so let's do it again, but worse. So it's really hard for me to find great things that stand out to be like, well, I think this was done really well, or this was done really well. There's a couple things with, like, Creed and Bianca that I think we could have spent more time... Bianca, right? I'm saying that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, yep. I know yep. it's Bianca. But they do a couple things there that are at least fun moments.
Yeah.
With those characters. And it's like, oh, right. Remember how fun Creed 1 was? Because, like, that first Creed movie is just about all these people being people.
Yeah.
And then in Creed 2, sometimes people are people. And there's, like, a couple select scenes with his mom and Bianca when they do yeah. the pregnancy thing.
Oh, and the proposal is delightful.
Yes, the proposal is great. And yeah. also, that's one of those things that's very much... You know, the callbacks to that first Creed movie of, like, Rocky has to walk him through this stuff. And
yes, yes.
Also, it deals with the absurdity of the Rocky movies, right? Of, like, well, how did you do this proposal? Well, actually, I just did the, you know, like,
right.
And it, knowing that those movies are kind of absurd, Creed kind of, as a film, grapples with that a little bit of, like, that is fucking weird, and then kind of just moves on.
Yes.
It's, so there's a couple scenes where those humans are humans and not plot mechanisms. They're just so far apart and they don't accomplish much that it's really hard for me to look at these characters and understand their motivation on a very personal level, especially because it's such a big topic. It's yeah. a complicated, messy situation.
Yes.
All of it. The political, as we said, the political parts of it, the personal parts of it, and then somehow, some way, we walk away with a very sterile film that doesn't really grapple with any of the important decisions anyone's making other than, hey, it's going to be really cool when he goes to a desert and flips a tire.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately you end up with, you know, Creed 1 is a movie about Adonis and Rocky that has some boxing in it. Creed 2 is a boxing movie that has a little bit of some story about Adonis and a little bit more story about Rocky in it. The boxing is really the thing that takes the center stage there, and the spectacle around the boxing instead of the characters in those relationships. And a lot of that, like we've talked about, then leans on nostalgia, like for the characters. It leans on nostalgia for the time period. It doesn't grapple with the history, but it goes, hey, you remember this, right? So, like, this would be a cool thing to have for the fight. That's the cool thing that we're going to do in this movie, right? So, like, it does end up doing a disservice to those characters. And, I mean, I think it's difficult for this movie because it's sandwiched between Rocky 1 and Rocky 3, and we're going to talk more about Rocky 3 shortly.
Well, Creed.
Creed, yes. You're right, yes. Creed. Oh, man.
Yep, we lost our minds already.
It's true. Talking about the second movie, which, like, that's part of the thing with Creed 2, is that, as you pointed out earlier, like, you get a lot of Rocky in that movie, and it doesn't necessarily know who it wants the main character to be.
So. This movie feels like a Rocky movie.
Yeah. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And that's the thing that I think is really challenging, because Creed felt like they knew what the soul of Rocky 1 was and made that into a very cool, modern thing. Creed 2 is, what if we made another Rocky movie?
Yes.
And use the Creed family instead of the Balboa family.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And it's not, there is not nearly as much there to walk away with going, oh, yes, of course, this was really good. Couple of things. I have some questions for you.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you think, because mm-hmm. I know what I think, do mm-hmm. you think they do a better job with that with the Drago family? Like, are the Dragos well-rounded, better built out, or are they just as cheesy and hole-punchy as some of the rest of this movie?
So they did a better job with them than I was expecting them to, but I don't think they did a good job, is what I will say. I think, like, Victor barely gets any lines at all.
I think it was kind of an Arnold and Conan situation where they're just like, don't let him talk. don't let him say anything.
I mean, and I will say that, you know, the physical acting and the facial expressions, fantastic. Like, yes, if the speaking was not the strong suit, then absolutely lean on that physical presence, which was fantastic. But I don't. We get the outline of a story there. We get a couple scenes where there's a little bit of meat put on the bones of that story, but I don't think we spend enough time with them to really make that story have the kind of impact that what you get in Creed 1 with Apollo and Bianca. You don't get that with Drago.
I will say this. I think I asked you that because I think they actually do a better job with the Drago family. And I think that's why the Dragos are getting their own TV show, or at least Ivan is getting his own TV show now. Because they spend more time, you know less about them. So it doesn't, what they do build out at least seems somewhat compelling because you don't know anything about them, right?
Yeah.
We eventually find out that once Ivan was kicked out of all of Russia and sent to the Ukraine, which apparently they want him back, right? Whenever he leaves, you know, and the woman who's the woman who is his woman, apparently his wife, but that's not very clear. That relationship is not very clear. But that's Victor Drago's mom.
Right.
Who wants nothing to do with any of them because he's not a winner. So Victor has to then train with his, you know, failed boxing father and use Adonis's rise to try to, you know, become the next big thing to get the love of his mom back, right? Like, to get his mom to love him again, right? Mm-hmm. You know, even Ivan says things like, you know, she doesn't want us, you know, not just you, or, you know, not just me. She doesn't want us. She doesn't want to be a part of our lives until Victor wins that first fight, and then she's around again, and it's very nice, and everyone's having a good time in Russia. And then they're not. And like, and then Victor loses again, and she disappears through that fight, right? She gets up and leaves in the middle of the fight. And, oh no, his mom doesn't love him. But he does get the respect of Adonis, you know, Adonis eventually, right? Like,
right.
They at least respect each other as fighters because they communicated the only way that they know how, which is by punching stuff.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into more with Creed 3. Boy, oh boy. I just struggled, like... I wish there was more for me to say, yes, it tackles with this, right?
Yeah.
I found the Dragos at least interesting.
Yeah.
Because they were able to take a literal cartoon plot and make your bad guy sympathetic. And that's great because mm-hmm. it could have been way worse.
Yes. I would definitely agree that they do a better job. I think I still don't know that they do as good a job, or maybe they do an on par job as they did with Conlon in the first movie. Because I think you do get that perspective of, hey, our bad guy's not actually so bad in the first movie too. And I feel like we spend a little bit more time with Conlon in some of those scenes. Although I do think that the scenes that we get of Drago are more emotionally impactful than anything that we get with Conlon. And part of that is some of the scenes with the mother. Like the dinner scene that they have, I think that is actually a pretty effective scene. That is one of the scenes where I'm like, oh, you're actually doing character stuff here. This is fun. Good. You should do more of this.
Yeah, maybe that was what I walked away from with that too, or why that stuck with me so much, was that, hey, these characters are fun.
Yeah.
Right? Give them time to be characters. You have some really good actors doing really fun things. Give them space.
Yeah.
Right? Let them be humans.
Yeah.
And really happy to see Creed 3 get back to human beings as human beings. And Creed 2 just continues to kind of just struggle on making it over the finish line for any of the points it tries to make. Like, its relationship with the past. Does it get there, Chris? Does it earn its time to spend with the Drago family?
and that's the thing. Like, I don't think at any point it ever does earn any of that. And like, I think if you want to watch a fun boxing movie that has like that the plot isn't terrible, Creed 2?
Watch Creed 1 again.
Well,
Creed 1 has better fights.
Oh, yeah.
I think Creed 1 is one of the... That single take round is still the best scene, and I think all three movies. And 3 is pretty cool and does some cool shit, but that single round take of what the fuck it looks like to be, like, to give you that feel of what their feel is for what it looks like to be in one round of boxing is one of super, super fucking powerful for what they want you to see that character live through.
Yes.
Yeah. I think I wrote down in 2, and I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no.
I wrote down too much CGI is a thing that I wrote down. I don't know if it was because of the crowd. I was kind of drunk. when I watch this, that will bleed into later discussion too. But I, there are parts of this movie that felt like, hey, we have a budget.
Yes.
Hey, we're going to use that budget on a couple of things. I don't think the fight necessarily had CGI in it, or where it did, I couldn't really tell, but it's stuff like the crowd, I think, is what really took me out of some of this stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think it, again, it leans into spectacle in a way that, I think it is important to say that I don't think this is a terrible movie. I don't think Creed 2 is a terrible movie. I don't think either you or I walked away from it being like, this movie does not deserve to exist. But again, when you have Creed 1 as the thing that preceded you and then Creed 3 as the thing that follows you, it's like, oh, we see all the ways in which this gets done so much better. So to your point, like, I don't think it's something that you should not watch, but also Creed 1 and Creed 3 are both there instead.
Creed 2 does put these characters, when it spends time with them, that time is fun, right? So whenever you put these characters in fun situations, they are still fun to be around. So if nothing else comes out of Creed 2, some of the growing relationship stuff, none of it really changes. Except for the Creed family has a child by the end of the movie, right? But some of the time you spend with Adonis as a father, whenever he didn't grow up with one, and there are really compelling character pieces there to tackle. You and I have spent no time talking about them because he spends time, you know, dealing with being a father.
Yeah.
And it's not that I couldn't care less, but it's just not, that's one of the better scenes. And some of that stuff is some of the more fun stuff that comes out of the movie.
Yes.
And then also he has to fight this big Russian guy.
Yeah.
So at some point in time with this, right. And he comes out of that dealing with failure. You know, he comes out of, hey, I am now a failed boxer. After my rise to fame and stardom in Creed 1, I have lost a major fight. Is it lost or is he DQ'd? I can't even
DQ'd. He gets to keep the title technically.
Technically. And so he feels, you know, that it's not earned, right? Yes. That he did not earn that title retention, and he has to fight him again. So they go to Russia and fight again, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's not enough. With the fighting in Creed 1 means something.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it's in service of the characters.
Uh-huh.
The fighting happens to move the characters along, not the characters happen to move the fights along.
Yeah. And it shows itself through the entire, it shows its whole ass when it's like, I don't know, we just want them to fight a big scary Russian guy. Yeah. So here they are. And here's Rocky being sad. And Rocky's not in Creed 3. Rocky Balboa is not even mentioned. Not even a name on a lip anywhere. Does no one, you know, no one says Rocky Balboa. Not a person.
Not even once.
We hear George Foreman referred back to. You know, they do the Rumble in the Jungle, right? You know, we talk about historic real boxers, and, you know, part of the fun was of Creed 1 is that we dealt with these characters as real. And then, like, Creed 2 doesn't do any of that stuff.
Yeah, the interesting thing that I'm realizing now is that we do get mention of Rocky from the sports announcers who are talking about, oh, remember when... I'm thinking of two.
You're thinking of Creed 2. Yeah.
No, it never happens. His name doesn't come up.
His name literally is not said. Never mind.
Yeah.
Creed 2 points at some of this a little bit of what, you know, some of the jokes that they make in Creed and Creed 2 about their found family. There's a lot of really good jabs, no pun intended, of, hey, Rocky is white and Creed is black. And there are a couple of fun takes on that that they do. You know, not that that stuff has to be funny, but I think they do have some fun with that relationship. And Creed 2 still has some fun with that relationship. But you see, even the time that Adonis takes to get ready for that first fight against Drago, where Rocky is not there, the color palette is still skewed dark.
Hmm.
So I know it's you know, the red and blue between the two, but the color palette is still...
Warm browns.
Warm browns, you're right.
Yeah.
Skewed dark until he goes and trains in the desert with Rocky later. And then all of a sudden we get brighter color.
Yes.
So it's like, there's still stuff there with, like, what does it mean to have Rocky around? And, you know, who does Adonis surround himself with? And I think there's still something there. Creed 3 does a way better job of really kind of exploring what Adonis's future is like. And that, hey, it is kind of weird that Rocky's around a lot in Creed 2. Because, like, he really doesn't have anything to do in Creed 2. And he's not in a compelling relationship. And it's just not fun anymore. Also, for a guy who has cancer or had cancer and, like, is cured of it, but it was, like, still hard to move him around. Like, him going to the desert and doing... I don't know. There's something there with what they do with Rocky and Creed, their relationship in one, that should have been explored more in two, and it's just not, because their history together, you get it in one Street Lamp and Philly conversation. And then it's never back. Like, that spark between those two actors is gone.
Yeah.
And I think some of that is why he's on Creed 3 anywhere, because they don't have something there anymore.
Right.
And I'm happy if that's what had to happen.
Yes.
We had to drop Sylvester Stallone.
Yes.
He's rich. He'll be fine.
Oh, yeah.
To give Michael B. Jordan space to direct this next movie, which we'll be talking about here in moments. I think it's worthwhile. So anything else for Creed 2? Because I kind of want... Like Creed 3, I would like to drop it immediately.
Right? Yeah. No, I mean, I think the only other thing you gestured towards the I think the movie also, like, wants to say something about dads, which I think is also something that has to do with, like, how we deal with our history. And essentially what it does is go, are all these dads bad? Aren't they just a bunch of dads, like, bad? But it doesn't actually ever sink its teeth at, like... You get a whole bit of, Adonis, you're not going to be here for your daughter. She's just born. And then he goes out to the desert for however long he goes out. Just, no, it's cool. Just don't worry about it. This is fine.
So
yeah. I think we should let Creed 2.
Let's set it aside.
Yeah.
Let's not put its name on our lips ever again.
Yes.
And now we'll compare some stuff, but. With that, we will move on to Creed 3, and we will be right back.
And we're back. And now we get to talk about a movie just fresh in our minds. Just saw Creed 3.
This is the closest, I think, you and I do this pretty regularly.
Yes.
Which is, hey, we go out, we go watch a movie, we get a drink or two afterwards and talk about it, usually with Brandon, the other person who we usually do this with. So this is not abnormal for you and I to go see a movie and come back and drink some wine, at least, or something, and talk through it. Have some opinions and thoughts. So yeah, this movie just came out. By the time you're listening to this, it will still be out in theaters. So again, as we talk about Creed 3, spoilers all up and down. Creed 3 does a really great job grappling with the Creed movie franchise. And it does that by going back to what Creed 1 did really well, which is build compelling character moments for these really interesting characters. We have Adonis and Bianca now have a... Their daughter is now like...
super adorable.
Yeah, like she's a real person and she's in school.
Yeah.
We deal with kind of some of their family challenges of, you know, their daughter is deaf. So they, you know, you see this a little bit in Creed 2 where they both are using sign language to communicate with just themselves. They find out that their daughter is deaf because of Bianca's stuff can be hereditary. And they're now fully talking in sign language for, you know, like a, I think there's like a 2-minute scene.
Yeah.
Where, you know, everything's in sign language with some subtitles. But they're really, everyone's a whole person again.
Yes.
Where Creed 2.
We actually, in Creed 2, one of the things that I found incredibly frustrating is in Creed 1, you get some of Bianca's music career, you get some of Bianca's interests, and you get to see her as a person independent of Adonis. In Creed 2, nothing. Except for when she sings the song when they're walking in for the final fight, which was like, what is even happening? This is...
I honestly... I did not forget of her as a character in Creed 2, but it was like, oh, right, Bianca's here.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Remember the emotional pillar of the entire first movie? Oh, she can sing.
right.
Which we knew, so that's not interesting, but it's like, oh, no, she's successful now.
Yes. But in this movie, like right from the get-go, you see she is recording one of the first couple scenes that you see her and Donnie together on their own is in her recording studio where she's working on some stuff. And you get an adorable scene between the two of them that works really well to not only demonstrate how much they still love each other, how they are very much still into each other, but also how she is very successful and she is still in the process of living her life, doing her... And we also... They do such a good job of layering this. You also get added context that they bring up later on that lets you know that she's doing primarily production work, which is different than what she thought she was going to do. Like, she, you get a bunch of character in like 5 minutes of them just hanging out in this studio. And it's like, oh, Bianca, you're back. Oh, thank God. We missed you.
She is and continues to be one of the best things in these movies.
Oh my
God,
yes.
And the fact that Creed 2 did her so dirty just makes everything in Creed 3 really, really, just really fun to be around, right? Like, they're fun around each other.
Yes.
Their daughter is fun, you know, their relationship with their daughter and how they are as people dealing with having a child that, you know, is going to do things like punch people. Because she is the daughter of a boxer, right? So there's really fun actual growth moments between all three of those characters of, hey, we've had a found family with Rocky Balboa. Now we have a real family. And what does that real family do? And what's it mean to have, like, what's it mean to grow with each other? And we can see that all these people are, like I said, real. It's hard to say, like, hey, man. Anyway, Creed 3 does a really great job of building all these people out, making them real, giving them their lives back that Creed 2 kind of just took away to tell us about Rocky and Drago. We see how Adonis knows Damien.
Yeah.
So Dame.
Diamond Dame.
Yep. How he knows Dame. We finally really go back and deal with Adonis's past that Creed 1 talked about, right?
Yes.
Creed 1, we deal with Adonis as a kid in a group home and struggling to find who he is as a person. He knows he's angry. He doesn't have a father, and he's mad. In Creed 3, we deal with what it was like whenever he had a support structure, and he was still a rebellious black teen in LA. What type of challenges that gives him, right? And I think we go from not really talking about it to where it should have been explored in a different movie, that Creed 3 finally gets to like deal with all this shit in a way that I think really works for this movie.
Yeah, it's funny because I think there was... I don't remember whether this is something that you and I talked about, but I know that there's been conversation about, oh, you know, Creed 2 is what happens when you're successful and what do you do with that? And how do you do that when you reckon with your past and, you know, feeling like, have I earned this? The second movie seems like the place where that should have happened. And it seems like some of what they were trying to do, like, oh, you won. Now what? And the second movie fails to do that, whereas this movie does a fantastic job of saying, okay, you did it. You got there. How you feeling now? How are you doing with the success? Has that taken care of all those old wounds for you? Are you a full human now that you have succeeded in everything you wanted to? Spoiler alert, the answer is no.
Yeah, it's almost like life continues to happen to you and around you, and you can't just say, well, we're done. That's the thing. He moves his career on in Creed 3. So he defends his unified world heavyweight championship one last time against our big bad from Creed 1.
Right? Yes, Conlon comes back.
Yep, Conlon comes back.
It's their second fight. Conlon joking that, well, this time you're old and I'm going to get you.
Mm-hmm. And he does not. So they move on from that, and he hangs up the gloves, and he's now a part of Duke's gym. He has his own stake in the gym. So now it's kind of the Creed something gym as well. And he's now living a life away from being in the ring while still being around boxing.
Still setting up fights, promoting things. Got a new young gun, Felix the Beast, who, you know, is, you know, a really precocious boxer. I think by the time we meet them, has like won by knockout 14 of their 15 bouts.
Yep, he is his own heavyweight champion.
Yeah,
maybe not unified, but he's at least right. A champ. And then we get back to Dame. Like, Damien shows back up. We have to deal with where Adonis is in his current life, away from the ring. Dame is a great instigator. He is a shit stirrer for everyone when it comes to, you know, he does it with Bianca, where they're at that record label dinner thing, and he goes, well, you're a producer. You don't get to perform live. Don't you miss it? You know, specifically, what's it like having someone sing the song you wrote?
Yeah.
And you don't get to do it.
Yeah, it's great because she's like, well, you know, when it's her singing it, this you know, beautiful vocalist who does a really good job with the song. And Dame goes, it sounds good. Wish I could believe you.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a great, great instigator, shit stirrer. And you have Creed, who thinks he's done. Right? Thinks he's done everything he needed to do. Thinks he's finished with his past, and he now gets to live as this person, and he never has to think about anything that's ever happened to him ever again. There is a really great scene. I've watched some interviews with Michael B. Jordan. It is the first scene that they filmed, which is Dame and Creed go to a diner and get some food, and they have to deal with...
Diner in the old neighborhood.
Yep, in the old neighborhood. Dame is out of jail for jail time he committed while kind of standing up for Creed. But at the same time, you know, he had a gun on him, that he uses that gun to help save Adonis from a beating that he started.
Yeah. Creed as a kid sees someone from both of their past who not a terribly pleasant fellow, and, you know, Creed being the, well, all of these problems can be solved with fists kind of person that he is, immediately lays into to this guy and knocks him out, is like pummeling him, and then two other kids pop up and start beating Creed. And this entire time, you know, he was going to go grab some stuff for both he and Dame. Dame is in the car waiting for him. Dame, of course, realizes that Donnie is getting the crap kicked out of him. He has a gun on him. He takes the gun out, points it at these kids, and goes, "Hey, stop beating up my friend." And it does not end well.
Yeah, then the cops show up. No one gets shot. No one dies. Cops show up. He goes to jail with a couple priors for 18 years, 20 years, out 2 years early on parole for good behavior. And then he, again, has a plan. His plan is to become the world heavyweight championship or world heavyweight champion of the world. He's been watching all of Adonis's fights while he's been in prison. He's been watching, you know, as we eventually get to watching Adonis live what he thought should have been his life. Eventually does some other shit-stirring things like Felix and Drago. Drago, everyone's favorite big, large Russian boy, is back. They're going to have a big fight. Adonis is promoting it. And Dame has someone break Drago's hand. Someone shows up to this party and breaks Drago's hand. And we find out later that it's Dame, right? There's unreconciled history between these two characters. And we keep coming back to it. The movie does a really great job of building us back to that scene. And we keep building on that scene in the past. We keep building on Adonis and Dame's moment.
And even before that moment, because that moment is the moment where things kind of go sideways for the two of them, the movie also wants to make sure that we know that these two were together because they felt that they were brothers. They thought that they had a bond. That bond, as it turns out, Dame was the one who tried to kick the crap out of Adonis in the home that he was in, but helps pick him back up. So, you know, right from the beginning, the two of them fight together. You know, Donnie says, "Hey, you knocked me down," when they're in that scene at the diner. He's like, "Oh, you knocked me down." He's like, "Yeah, and who was it who offered to get you right back up? Who picked you back up?" Dame is basically saying, "Yeah, maybe I knocked you down a couple of times, but I'm always there to pick you back up, even if I'm not the one who knocked you down." And we see Dame, before getting thrown in prison, he is a boxer. We see him fight. We see him take apart this other boxer as a young kid and talk about, this is just the beginning. I'm gonna have it all. The world is my oyster, and this is just the start. And then he gets thrown in jail, and all of that gets taken from him. So, of course, when he sees on the TV that little punk kid that he used to, you know, knock around and who used to carry stuff for him, he's fighting for the title. He's never fought a fight before. Are you kidding? And so all of that comes back when Dame does.
Yeah. As the movie continues to go on, the thing with that scene where they build out the arrest, it turns out, Chris, you and I have talked about this a little bit whenever we did our episode on masculinity, that men really don't like to talk about their emotions historically.
It's wild.
Yeah, and so Creed 3 is like, hey, what if someone said the words, "You should probably talk about this to someone. you should maybe like have this conversation with a human being and try to parse out your emotions with this complicated history that you have with this person." And that's Bianca, obviously.
Yes,
our only character who knows anything about anything. When I don't care if you talk to me about it or if you see someone, but you should talk to someone about your emotions and what you're feeling right now after Dame kicks the absolute shit out of Felix with some cheap shots and an intentional elbow and walks away with that championship belt. Adonis cannot get his shit straight because Adonis knows how to solve problems one way, and that is by punching his way through them. And he currently is not a boxer at this point in time in his life.
Yeah, he falls apart, and Bianca literally says at one point, "I've never seen him like this before." You know, usually, even if there's a problem, at least I'm there. At least he will lean on me. And He's not doing that anymore here. Like, he, things get weird. So you see Adonis in a situation where there's this person that he feels like he owes something to. This person from his past that he feels like he let down and has always been there for him. And now, well, I need to be able to stand up for this person. But that person also decimates something that is essentially, you know, part of his new life and what he is attempting to build. He just destroys this kid who is the pride and joy of Creed's new boxing gym. And he does it to prove a point. He does it to stir the pot. He's like, not only do I want to be the best, but I need you to know you didn't earn this. And Creed can't just talk to somebody about it and be like, hey, do I owe you anything? Like, are we cool? Are we not cool? He's like, no. He's just going to have a bad time and make everybody else in his life miserable while he refuses to speak a word of this to anyone.
Men will do anything. Multiple things before they go to therapy. And we see Adonis grapple with his own emotions and his own previous trauma and kind of how that made him into the person he is at the time of this film, which is unable to reconcile with, you know, what his past means to him and what his past and how his past has influenced his life today, which is, again, another different part two, chapter two of this franchise would have done more of that and dealt with him not having a father and what that meant to not have a father. You know, all of Creed One is about that found family experience. We see that he had some of that whenever he was growing up. You know, they decided they were brothers. They, you know, he had a support system in a very tough situation. He had someone who had his back. And then what it means for that, you know, as an adult today for him, he now has multiple people that has his back. He has his mom until his mom dies. So this would be the part that if you were going to have Rocky Balboa in Creed 3, this would be the part where you would say, and Rocky is there. Rocky is not there. We don't know. No one says anything about Rocky. We don't know anything about what happened to him in any way, shape, or form. We don't know if he's dead. No clue. We kind of just time skip past all of that relationship. Whether or not that relationship is still happening in the background, we have no idea.
Right.
But that would be the situation whenever he's, you know, whenever he was challenged with his emotions before, there was usually about Rocky or with Rocky. Or even in Creed 2, Rocky helps him deal with failure.
Yeah.
So all those people in his life are he's isolating them.
Yes.
And pushing them out. And some are also gone for other reasons. You know, his mom passes from a stroke. Rocky's not in the picture, literally. And, you know, Duke, his current trainer, tells him to get the fuck out of the gym, right? So that support system starts to unravel a bit because he's not dealing with things well.
Right. Well, and it's important because I think the Duke example is actually a really nice illustration of this. It's important to recognize that his support system has been throwing up warning flags about Dame from the beginning. It's like, hey, I think it's even specifically Duke who says, you feel like you owe this person something and you don't, and you don't understand what they're here to do. This is not good for you. It's not good for the gym. Don't do this. And this is before the fight with Felix. And he's like, no. My boy's cool. Don't worry about it. Like, I want to make sure that he gets a shot, and I want to give him a chance, and I think he can make his own. Then he puts him in the ring with Felix, and that goes horribly wrong. And basically, Duke is like, hey, don't show back up at the gym because I told you that this is exactly what would happen. It's like, I am part of your support structure. I am part of, like, the group of people who cares about you and wants good things for you. And I tried to help you to see what was in front of you, and you didn't want to. And so a lot of what you see in that middle section of the movie is Adonis refusing to accept the help and the guidance of the people who are now a part of an important part of his life.
We see Adonis's mom pass in a scene that I think works really, really well.
Yeah.
Holy shit. You have a lot of really good actors in this movie. And Oof. The her final moments after her last stroke. Boy, man, I was not crying because I was sober. But Drunk Justice, whew, man, that dude would have went on a trip. You'd have been handing me some tissues, my guy. That scene is, there's so many really well acted, like the act, I guess that's kind of where I struggle with Creed 2 a little bit as well. There are good actors in Creed 2, but they are not given space.
Yeah.
Creed 3 is like, hey, we have all these good actors. What if we gave them some space to work with?
Yeah. Well, in that scene, that is a great example of where Creed 2 would have leaned on nostalgia. What that scene does is it specifically deals with the past, and it does it in such an effective way. You get, you know, Adonis's mom, who talks initially to Adonis, like, hey, I tried, I love you, and then slips into talk. She's had a seizure or a stroke, so like she's not completely with it. She slips into talking to Apollo. So she has a conversation to Donnie as though he is Apollo and says, I was so mad at you. I was so mad at you for so long because you left me. And I need to, I'm going to tear up talking about it. I need to talk to you about this kid, Donnie. Adonis, he helped me to get over how angry I was at you. And he helped me to remember that I love you. And it's like,
it's so fucking good. And we really do a great job of rebuilding the stakes for Adonis solving this problem with his fists again, right? So after his mom passes, we get that really compelling scene with Bianca and them after the funeral, where they're dealing with the gap where Adonis's mom used to be. Literally, like there's a room in between the two of them.
Yeah.
Which also gorgeously shot film. Good job. Hey, Michael B. Jordan, good job, dude.
You did it.
you made a really gorgeous movie. But you deal with that gap in their relationship. She became really important to their support structure, especially with, their daughter and their relationship. And they finally get Adonis's head on straight. And getting his head on straight is, I think you should go punch stuff, probably. You should punch that man.
Right? Yeah.
You guys need to communicate. You both communicate one way, and it's by punching each other. So you guys should probably punch each other and solve your problems.
Yes. Well, they do have that. I love that conversation because Adonis is like, hey, feelings are hard for me. It's shocking. No one could tell.
No one knew.
No one had any idea. Yeah. It's like, feelings are hard for me. I don't always like know how to find the words. And he's like, they're so easy for you. And she's like, what? Bitch, what you talking about?
literally. No, fuck no, they're not.
Yeah. It's like, no, they're hard for me too. And, you know, she talks about how Adonis's stepmother was one of the outlets that she had to be able to have conversations about her feelings and emotions and how it's hard for her, too. And it does a really nice job of, like, making it clear to you that, like, it's not that Bianca is some, like, superhuman who's just good at feeling. She's a human, and she just wants Adonis to be a little bit better at being a human. That's it. And, you know, she does say, hey, you know, sometimes this means you need to talk. You need to use your words and you need to learn how to do that. But they come to the conclusion, sometimes you need to hit a man in the face.
Yeah. Eventually, violence is useful, right? As a communication mechanism, which is usually what violence is used for, right? It's a way to communicate thoughts or feelings of anger or aggression or sometimes even want or need. And do it that way. He's not doing this. Is no longer violence for violence sake, right? Everyone has a plan here. Everyone has a goal. We do kind of take John Majors from interesting, compelling kid character to eventually comic villain bad guy, where he's like in the penthouse enjoying his success. There's a woman on the couch, right? And then, you know, Adonis comes on TV and it seems like he's going to say, I'm coming back to boxing to take this guy out. And instead he calls, right? You know, right. Dame calls into the TV show and he's like, hey, fuck you.
He's like, Adonis is like, let's not do this now. And he's like, it's live. We're doing it.
Which, okay. Yeah, it's so fun. to rebuild those stakes for both of these characters, right? It's not that he's less of a character, but we kind of do take him from, hey, this is this type of person, and we reveal who he actually is, which is kind of a comic book bad guy, that he hired someone to break Drago's hands, right? And then Drago also comes back to help Adonis get ready for the fight, right? But, you know, he kind of turns into this, we kind of go from 0 to 60 with him really fast, where he's like, hey, you know, I just want a shot. I just want my chance. And then as Adonis starts to get his shit together, that man becomes fully that man.
Yeah, well, and so I think that the movie actually does a really interesting job of, we initially, like, we're seeing Dame through the lens of Donnie the entire movie. And so at the beginning of the movie, you see him sympathetically because, of course, like, Donnie's like, yeah, no, this is my boy. Like, he just needs a chance. And the moment that he breaks Felix and it's clear that actually he is not, and even, like, there's a space between there where Donnie is still wrestling with, like, wanting to give him some credit and also realizing that breaking Felix was a very bad thing to do, that, like, that's a little bit muddled. But eventually he lands on, oh, no, this guy is not great. And then the movie flips him into now in villain mode. So it does a really nice job of, like, giving us that perspective essentially through the lens of, this is what Donnie is seeing.
I was expecting him to be doing coke in that penthouse. Like, maybe it's just because we the closeness of RoboCop.
Yeah,
like, I was like, there should be coke everywhere. But no, this movie takes place in 2023, not the 80s.
Right.
You know, so no, there's no coke in that penthouse. Whenever we get to the build-up for the fight, like I said, we get Drago back. And now they're best friends, right? Like, Drago, he was promoting this fight with Felix, with Drago. Now Drago's going to help him get the fight back in shape. And need to get this out of the way right quick. Michael B. Jordan is a man who fucking loves anime. Loves it. Unabashedly so. I believe he has a clothing line that's like Naruto shit, right? Like, the dude loves anime.
There was a moment in the movie where young Donnie is in his room and he's supposed to be asleep, and there's a poster on the wall, and we, Justice, you and I turned to each other and you went, "That's a Gundam."
I literally pointed at the screen and went, "That's a Gundam."
Yeah, that's a Gundam.
Yeah. So, like, the man unabashedly loves anime. And, you know, good for you. Be a weeb. Live it. And so Drago is Piccolo, if you've ever seen Dragon Ball Z. Drago is Piccolo. He is the bad guy turned good guy.
Who doesn't say much.
Who also does not say much, and eventually will train his daughter, right? Eventually to complete that metaphor and that transformation. So yeah, we get very much the anime build-up training montage. Well, also, you know, like, that's also a very Rocky thing.
Yeah.
But man, we do it good.
Yes.
There is something this movie continuously says about success. All of these movies, it seems like coming from a place of victory is a harder thing to sustain than it is to want to achieve. Like, every time the underdog wins, every time, almost no matter what, right? Like, it's really hard. I don't know. I have not solidified my point on this. I think you talked a little bit about it earlier, but, like, yeah, being a winner is hard, and identifying as a winner is hard. So Adonis coming at this as the underdog provides him freedom to, like, get rid. It's very strange. I don't know. I don't understand what the fuck any of these movies mean by, like, hey, being a champion is, like, hard, but also, I don't know.
Well, I do think, you know, we talked a little bit about how that ties into identity. And I think a lot of what this movie is leaning on is the way in which identity is informed by your history. And once you win, your history is you are a winner. And part of your identity becomes being a winner. And so we see, like, in Creed 2, this is very much the case. Like, oh, you're a winner now. The only place to go is down. And so, like, why would you? So that's part of that. And it doesn't really do anything terribly interesting with it. This movie basically goes, hey, you're gonna leave the sport as a winner. You did it. But there's always that question, like, well, but could you have lost? Like, could you have? And as long as your identity and your worth, and I think that's one of the big things that we get to with some of the conversations that happen throughout the movie, particularly at the end with Bianca, and some of the conversations he has with his mom before she passes, where a lot of people are telling Donnie, hey, you are getting in your own way. You have beliefs about who you are that are preventing you from actually being able to engage with what you have right now. And you believing that you are a winner and assuming that that must continue to be true in the present means that anytime a challenger comes up or anytime anything like that, like, now you have to do the work to maintain that. Even if the work to maintain that means letting down your daughter, letting down your wife, like prioritizing an old friend who maybe doesn't have your best interests at heart. So like that ends up leading you to do things that might be against your better interest because you've made that your identity versus being able to say, I won once, but that's not my identity. My identity is I'm Adonis. And that's not the place that he's at when that movie starts, certainly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Once we get to the fight, and I think we see this, I'm slightly tainted by some of Michael B. Jordan's interviews that he did leading up into the movie, where he was talking about his directive or his directing perspective and kind of what he wanted to do. But one of the things he came back with, and also this was one of the things he tied to anime, which is, you know, these two men are going to use their fight as a way to have a conversation. The things, two guys who are dumb idiot men who cannot talk about their feelings are instead going to punch their feelings into each other. So, you know, we talked about this a little bit whenever we went out for lunch after the movie. There's really, I don't know if you're not a male or male identifying, you won't know this because this is actually one of the secrets of the world. But anytime two guys need to apologize, what they do is they rent out an entire baseball stadium, set up a ring and fight in it. It's what we do. It's what we do as men.
That's the rules.
That's the rules, right? So we rent out all, you know, an entire stadium. It's why men usually don't apologize to each other because it's an expensive endeavor to do this. So yeah, they rent out all of
Dodger Stadium,
yeah. And they put up a boxing ring and they're gonna have a conversation, right? So it's a giant boxing ring in a fucking baseball field, cool as shit. The scene, the movie really turns it on. Like I said, it's a well shot movie. It's gorgeous. There's a lot of stuff happening. Especially there's a scene where they're like both in the tunnel before Dame's first fight, and Donnie's on
doorway. Like the lighting is slightly different.
And they're both looking at each other because you kind of know what they want to actually do is fight each other, kind of already.
Well, again, what they actually want to do is have a conversation. But the only way to have a conversation is to fight each other.
Yeah. Yes, correct. Sorry. Yeah, I forgot the rules. The lead into the fight is like them coming out is great. The one with Dame and Felix is gorgeous.
Yeah.
The stuff they do with Felix is awesome.
Yeah.
This is a little less impressive. I kind of miss Creed 2 a little bit. I thought because we did so much shit stirring with Bianca that she would actually come out and perform or something like that. Like, let's go all the way, right? If everyone's back, get the whole fucking crew back together, let's go. But no, they just have Creed come out.
Yep.
And he's in white trunks. Adonis is in white trunks, and then Dame is in black trunks,
yes.
Right? Hey, you know, this is an action movie. We don't need subtlety.
Yes.
So whenever they finally get into that ring and start the fight, man, this is a fucking good looking movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really happy we saw this on the big screen.
Yeah.
On the big XD one.
Especially that fight.
Yeah. Like, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
And they do a bunch of really cool things. So we don't get a single take round. I get it. That was probably really fucking hard for everyone to do. And also, this is Michael B. Jordan's directorial debut. We get a couple of scenes that are pretty long.
Mm-hmm.
You can see like an aerial cutaway.
Yeah.
I don't know if they tried to do that in like one take and they were like, hey, this is kind of where, you know, you have an edit in there usually.
Right.
And then the action's just good. Man, just two big ass fucking dudes punching each other. And man, are these big boys. Like, everyone's, all right, everyone's hot. Like,
yes.
And that's, and like, I didn't feel like that was universally true in Creed 2. And yeah. I know that's not true in Creed 1.
Yeah.
But
sure.
In Creed 3, fuck, goddamn.
Yeah, good looking cast.
Yeah.
Good looking cast.
So like, I also, did you notice the entire film leading up to John Majors taking off his shirt? Like, you were like, you would think he'd be shirtless now. You'd think he'd be shirtless now. You'd think he'd be shirtless now. And it's like, nope, we've saved that for right now. It's like literally like, it's yeah. like they know they're teasing you the entire yeah. fucking time. Oh, yeah. With how
yeah, no, they know what they're doing.
How big is this man? Mm. And he takes off his shirt and you go, shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is a big man. And so like the fight is awesome. The fight is, if you were to go see Creed 3 for any other reason than any, like anything, go see it for this last fight. It is super fun. They do a cool thing where you can figure out how these two men use fighting to talk,
mm-hmm.
where they, you know, we, boxing is very lonely. Mm-hmm. In the Creed universe, it is you and one other person, and mostly it's you and yourself.
Yes.
Right. So even though there's all these support systems, all this stuff, eventually it is you and another person beating the shit out of each other. And that is a lonely thing to do as a career. So eventually the scene, they cut the whole, oh, it's so cool. They cut everyone out. And it's just the two of them fighting. And we get some anime-ass anime shit. We get, like, props are involved. Like, we get some anime shit. It is a good time.
There's some slow motion.
Well, there's the slow motion stuff.
Yeah.
There's the being on the ropes is like being in prison. And, yes. like, hey, beating up on you is like whenever we used to practice fighting because we were in an abusive group home, right?
Yes,
like,
yes,
they do all this stuff, and then it's also like the reveal in that that's kind of fun too is like cut to, it's actually round 11, right? Like these guys are now so yeah. obsessed with fighting each other, like cut to 3 hours later, it is the end of the fight, and hey, guess what, Adonis wins, right?
Right,
that's the end of the movie. They Creed wins. Hey, good guys prevail. They do champagne, and they do the very modern thing of whenever you do champagne, you all wear goggles so no one loses an eyeball.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And
safety first.
Safety first.
Get a ring and hit your brain multiple times. But
wear these goggles.
Yeah.
And then Adonis and Dame sit down and have an actual fucking conversation.
Yes. Yes.
Now that they know each other, now that they understand each other, they're ready to talk.
Well, and I think like it really does. The fight functions so well to have the first leg of that conversation. And the first leg of that conversation is, you know, sort of laying groundwork, like figuring each other out, letting some boundaries down, like learning about each other. And then finally being like at the end of the fight, like, okay, I thought you were this kind of person, but the fight has shown me that actually you, and like specifically, you know, Dame, you hear him constantly tell Donnie, you run away, you know, you need me to pick you up, you're nothing, you have never stood up for yourself ever in your life. And so the thing that he learns in this fight is actually, he can do that just fine, as it turns out. But I think you also get some degree of, you know, Donnie having a better understanding of the amount of pain and abuse that Dame has put up with based on the amount of pain and abuse that he deals out. And Dame is like, this is nothing. I have done this is a Tuesday to me.
Right.
Like, and so after that conversation happens, then they can actually let down the guard and stop having the chip on both of their shoulders that prevented them from being able to have a real conversation with each other about what actually happened when they were kids and the way that it continues up until that point to color their lives.
We end that movie in that stadium with Adonis being a father, right? One of the minor plot points is, hey, their daughter is also kind of angry, and she also wants to fight, and she wants to learn, and we end that movie after...
She seems like she's got, like, a really good right hook.
Yeah, yeah. We end that with, like, him being a father, which is the one thing that he never was able to have, right? And he does that, and we leave those characters in a really great spot that also means we never really have to come back to any of this stuff ever again.
Yes.
The Rocky movies didn't really do that, right? Yeah. Like, one of the things that I was talking to you about was I was expecting these two men to grow their respect for each other.
Yes.
And then maybe Adonis still lose, right? Because he's out or whatever. And then do the Rocky thing where now that they understand each other, they just get together in a warehouse and do it one more time for fun. And then we do like the cutaway, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of, but this movie really isn't interested in the past of the Rocky films.
Yes.
In any way, shape, or form. Yeah. Instead, we spend a lot of time dealing with Adonis's past.
Yes.
And what that means for him and who he is as a person. Again, in a way that Creed 2 really should have.
Yeah.
And I'm just, whenever we, coming away from that film and leaving these characters in a good spot, I was, I'm content. We don't have to have another Creed movie. I don't know what the fuck that movie would even be at this point.
Yeah, agreed. And I mean, I think, you know, a lot of that ending, what it that the moment that you get before the scene where he is with his family is that moment with him and Dame and them basically saying, hey, this wasn't your fault. Like, we were kids. Kids can't be expected to make the kinds of decisions that we were being asked to make and to deal with the kind of stuff that we were being asked to deal with. That's not on us. And the entire movie has been Donnie refusing to grapple with that fact and feeling like, no, it's my responsibility to hold all of this on my shoulders. And by doing that, I'm neglecting what I actually have currently in my life. And so you get to see a scene of him say, you know what? You're right. It's not my fault. And it wasn't your fault either, Dame. This wasn't on us. And then go actually be with his family. The end of that movie is saying, Donnie figured it out. He
did it. He still didn't have to go to therapy. Yeah. Like, he did it. He got through it.
Right. So I agree. I think that that is a wonderful place to leave those characters, because now you've worked through, like, a lot of the primary tensions that were introduced in that first movie. Like you said, the second movie ideally would have, like, dealt with some of the ones that the first movie didn't, because the scope wasn't to fix everything. The scope was to start that conversation. This movie actually gets a chance to do that in a way that, hey, good work. You did it.
Yeah. Any closing thoughts on Creed 3?
And just entirely that I think that the movie does such a wonderful job of getting us back to these characters. And I think a lot of that did mean that we got to actually deal with the past, and we got to actually deal with the present. And we got to see relationships that, you know, grew and changed informed by that relationship with the past. And I'm really, really happy that the movie left us in a place where, hey, these people have grown. You got to care about them, and now you get to see them, like, yield, you reap the fruit from all of that work that's been done in the first movie and the third movie.
And the second movie's there, right?
Right.
The second movie introduces us to Drago, who's still around.
Yeah. Right?
So it happened. It's canon.
Yeah. I like Drago seems fine.
Drago, why I'm like, cool. I think that all of these movies are worth watching. I think Creed 1 and Creed 3 are both really, really great. Again, Michael B. Jordan starting here, good on him. I also think this movie is a better movie without Sylvester Stallone in it, as we saw with what ended up happening with Creed 2. Yeah, it's a fun time, and it's a fun time. All of these movies are fun. But 1 and 3 both have something really interesting to say about the characters and what's actually happening, and also Creed 2 is there. super fast lightning round. Are you ready?
Let's go.
Does boxing have rules?
I think the answer is technically yes, but in practice, no?
No, the answer is no. Boxing doesn't have rules. Anything can be boxing if you think about it. Last, only other lightning round question. In Creed 2, there are hoodies that say Creed on them on the back. Do you think you would ever wear a shirt with your name on the back of it?
Dear God, no. Absolutely not.
Fair. All right. And that will do it for this week's, this episode of Cultural Fugazi, not this week's, this episode. This time we can tell you what we're going to talk about next time. First off, if you have any thoughts or opinions about Creed 2 and that it's a better movie and we did it a disservice, you can email us, us@fugazipod.com, and let us know that we're dumb and bad and that Creed 2 is good and awesome. Otherwise, for the next one of these that we're going to do is we're going to do the thing that we talked about. We're going to talk about Contact.
Yeah.
So we're going to watch that. So maybe prep that for the next time. And we will see you here soon on Cultural Fugazi.
Thanks.